Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Excelsoft Technologies Limited Q2 and H1 FY 2026 earnings conference call. I have with me Mr. Dhananjay Sudhanva, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Prashant HM, Head of Strategy, Mr. Subramanian Ravi, Chief Financial Officer. Before we proceed, I would like to bring to your attention that certain statements made during this discussion may constitute forward-looking statements. These statements are based on our current expectations, assumptions, and beliefs regarding future developments and inherently subject to various risks, uncertainties, and factors beyond our control. Such forward-looking statements involve both known and unknown risks, and we advise you to interpret them with caution. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Dhananjay Sudhanva, Chairman and Managing Director, for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Sudhanva.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. A very warm welcome to all of you joining our maiden earnings conference call as a listed company. This is a significant milestone for all of us at Excelsoft Technologies. For nearly 25 years, we have been building an organization which is rooted in innovation, strong domain knowledge, and long-term customer trust. Today marks our first opportunity to share that journey with the public markets in a formal quarterly setting. I'm deeply grateful to our shareholders, analysts, clients, partners, and our employees whose belief and support have brought us to this moment. Let me begin with a brief overview of Excelsoft. The company was founded in the year 2000 in Mysore with a mission to reimagine how teaching, learning, and assessments could benefit from the power of digital technology and the internet. Over these years, we have established ourselves as a global provider of digital learning and assessment products and solutions, serving more than 200 organizations across 19 countries and counting. What differentiates us is the depth of our domain expertise. Having spent 20 years, our domain expertise in the area of digital assessment and learning is fairly deep. That's a key differentiator in the areas of assessments, broadly in the area of education and content-driven learning. The reliability and security of our technology platforms, we are very proud of because we deliver a lot of very high-stakes, zero-failure, large-scale testing and learning on our platforms. Our ability to build long-standing relationships with awarding bodies, universities, publishers, corporates, and training organizations worldwide are a testimony to the list of customers that we work with today. Many of our customers have been with us for over a decade, typically long-term customers, and hence the stickiness in most of our contracts, which speaks to the consistency and dependability with which our teams deliver. Let me begin by giving a detailed overview of what Excelsoft does. Our business operates through two broad segments: products and services. Within these, and both products and services are obviously limited to the two important domains we work in, which is assessments and learning using technology and internet. So in that space, there is a product offering, there are services offerings. Within these, we work across four key verticals that form the backbone of our offerings. They are, in the product segment, assessment and proctoring solutions, learning and student success solutions. Those are in the product segments. The services segment includes education technology services learning design and content solutions. Let me explain a little bit of each of the verticals in detail. Our first vertical is assessment. Assessments is digital assessments, testing, etc. And proctoring solutions, anchored by our flagship product called Saref Assessment Platform. This platform is designed to support the complete life cycle of how high stakes exams or typically competitive exams, exams where even one failure is unacceptable. High stakes. To make this happen, we've built tools for item authoring. Item authoring is question authoring. Item bank management, which is a management of large repositories of questions, to managing workflows, which change from one customer organization to another, candidate scheduling, very secure online delivery, AI-enabled proctoring, automated and assisted scoring, and deep post-exam analytics. Our products are inherently AI-enabled. There are a few products where AI was blended to bring in the true power of AI, whether it is in authoring or in delivery of tests. But many of our more recent products are natively built on AI. And if we do get a chance at some point in time, we'll talk more about it. This is an environment where reliability, security, and scalability are paramount, and Saras has earned the trust of leading awarding bodies, universities, best publishers, certification agencies, and talent assessment organizations worldwide. Many of these clients rely on us during peak examination periods, and our platforms are designed to consistently deliver under such mission-critical solutions. Our second vertical is learning and student success solutions, which provides institutions, mostly higher education sector, with digital learning environments that improve the teaching and learning experience. These platforms support course delivery, learner engagement, competency mapping, skill assessments, and personalized learning pathways. We believe that every individual learns differently. What is effective learning for me would be different somebody who is in my cohort. Our software is intelligent enough to learn the traits of a learner and maneuver their learning journey to be most effective to each individual, and hence we call it a maneuverable learning platform. That is the learning pathway. They are widely used by corporates for capability development, by universities for curriculum delivery, and by training organizations running large-scale skilling programs, skill development programs. As digital learning becomes mainstream across the world now, this vertical continues to grow in relevance and adoption, in fact, becoming more or less essential. Our third vertical is education technology services, which enables organizations to implement, customize, and expand their digital ecosystems. This includes solution engineering, user interface and user experience enhancements, system integration, cloud migration, and long-term managed services. Many customers begin with our platforms and then engage our services vertical to further optimize, tailor, extend their digital workforce. This vertical strengthens our ability to deliver true end-to-end transformation in the education technology space. Our fourth vertical is learning design and content solutions, through which we create interactive digital learning modules, assessments, simulations, and curriculum-aligned content. This vertical complements our platforms by enabling customers to adopt rich, engaging digital learning experiences. By providing both technology and content, we deliver integrated solutions that help our customers drive learner outcomes more effectively while improving retention and long-term value creation. Across all these verticals, we continue to embed Elevate. We call it AI Elevate, which is AI-centric products and content that we build. Our AI-driven intelligence layer is fairly deep. It's backed up with fairly high-end AI hardware infrastructure and all the learning models that are available, which are tuned for the domain of learning and assessment. We leverage on AI for every project we deliver to our customers. AI Elevate, it enhances item creation, that is question creation, improves content quality, accelerates assisted marking, strengthens proctoring intelligence. Proctoring is invigilation, particularly when you take an exam on a device. The device's camera is used to proctor to make sure that the candidate is not cheating, either in an individual setting or in a test center setting. We bring in quite a lot of AI in there. AI Elevate enhances item authoring, improves content quality, accelerates assisted marking, strengthens proctoring intelligence, and generates actionable analytics for learners and educators. Our approach to AI is rooted in responsibility and trust, as we operate in domains where fairness and security are very critical. In most cases, our deployments has to be zero defects. Even one failure is a full failure. We believe that AI Elevate will be a key enabler of our longer-term competitiveness. I would also like to touch upon an important milestone in our journey. Our IPO, Excelsoft, successfully raised, as most of you would know, 500 crores, including a fresh issue of 180 crores and an offer for sale of 320 crores. We were listed on both NSE and BSE on 26th November 2025, marking the beginning of our journey as a publicly traded company. The utilization of IPO proceeds is progressing as planned, and we earmarked 62 crores of the IPO proceeds plus part of it coming from internal accruals for purchase of land and construction of a new development center in Mysore. A further 39.5 crores is being invested towards upgrading our existing Mysore facility, including modernizing electrical and all digital infrastructure, hardware, software, cloud systems, and network enhancements, which is very critical for the business we are in. We work with some of the global leaders in the space we are in, and our infrastructure, tools, and methods will be benchmarked by what our competitors and our customers use, and we need to keep pace with how the customers are upgrading their own digital infrastructure. We also have to keep pace, and hence this investment is envisaged. Finally, there is a 9 crore allocation for GCP, General Corporate Purpose. These investments will enable us to scale our delivery capacity, accelerate innovation, and strengthen our readiness for global opportunities ahead. We have a full-time Spotify member team dedicated to research and innovation, and we believe that has always helped us be on par, if not better than competition. With this broad business overview, I would now like to hand over the call to our Head of Strategy, Prashant Hetchin, who will share key business developments and operational highlights for Q2 and H1 of FY 2026. Thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone on the call. Q2 FY26 and H1 FY26 were periods of strong progress for Exelsoft across our strategic, operational, and product building initiatives. While our chairman and managing director explained our business architecture and long-term capabilities, I will now take you through the important developments that shaped our momentum during this period. I would like to talk about two major developments, one of which is a major highlight this year, which is strengthening our global partnerships. Collaboration with AQA, one of the most respected awarding bodies globally. So the understanding is that together we form a joint AI task force which aims to develop responsible, scalable, and secure AI solutions for high-stakes assessment being our domain. This partnership means a lot to us. This task force is working on enhancing item generation workflows, improving marking efficiency, analyzing question performance, and developing new AI-assisted tools that can maintain fairness and integrity in examinations. The partnership not only validates our technological capability, but also places Exelsoft at the center of global conversations on responsible AI adoption in education. Another important development is our partnership with VTCT Skills, Vocational Training Charitable Trust, one of UK's leading vocational and technical awarding bodies. After a rigorous global evaluation process, VTCT selected as Exelsoft as its digital assessment partner for delivering approximately 300,000 assessments annually. This engagement is progressing well and involves deep collaboration across technology, content, and vocational assessment workforce. VTCT represents a significant step forward in strengthening our position as a vocational education sector, an area experiencing strong global growth as organizations increasingly prioritize skill-based learning. Beyond these partnerships, Q2 FY26 saw healthy traction across our product lines. Our assessment vertical continued to witness strong uptake from strong, long-standing clients, and we progressed key implementations in international markets. The learning and student success solutions vertical also showed growth momentum. Our education technology solutions vertical continued to contribute meaningfully as clients increasingly invested in system integrations, capability and upgrades, cloud transitions, and custom development projects. Meanwhile, our learning design and content solutions vertical too delivered strong performance. All in all the growth, all the four verticals have demonstrated significant growth. Geographically, we saw broad-based growth across the geographies. North America remained our largest market, contributing 63% of Q2 revenue. Europe and UK saw strong traction, aided by our deepening presence and strategic partnerships in that region. India and Asia outside India also contributed meaningfully, especially in digital learning and other services-led assignments. Additionally, our client concentration metrics continue to reflect our long-term relationships. Our top five customers accounting to 64% of Q2 revenues, and the top 20 customers contributing to 83%. Operationally, our teams across Mysore, Hyderabad, Noida, the US, UK, and Singapore delivered strongly during the implementation phases, strengthening our engineering capabilities, delivery mechanisms, and AI integration efforts remain a priority throughout the quarter. With this, I now hand the call over to our CFO, Mr. Ravi Subramaniam Ravi, to take you through the detailed financial performance of Q2 FY26 and H1 FY26. Over to you, Ravi.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Prashant. And good afternoon, everyone. Let me now walk you through the financial performance for the quarter and half year ended September 30, 2025. First, I will present the quarterly performance, Q2 FY26 versus Q2 FY25 year-on-year. The revenue from operations for Q2 FY26 stood at 646 million compared to 538 million in Q2 FY25, registering a robust growth of over 20%. EBITDA for Q2 FY26 stood at 175 million compared to 139 million in Q2 FY25. Marking a growth of about 26%. EBITDA margins were 27.1% compared to 25.9% in the prior year, resulting in a margin growth of about 1.2%. Employee benefit expenses increased by 9.6% to 337 million. Including other expenses, the cost increase was 18.1%. Please note that the cost includes 25.7 million in legal and professional fees spent on due diligence of potential acquisitions and the write-off of an income tax refund, which are exceptional items. The profit after tax for the Q2 FY26 was 106 million compared to 89 million in Q2 FY25, registering a growth of 18.65%. PAT margin were 16.43% compared to 16.62 in the prior year, not considering the exceptional item. Now I move on to half yearly performance. H1 FY26 versus H1 FY25 year on year. For the half year, revenue from operations stood at 1,203 million compared to 1,085 million in H1 FY25, representing a year on year growth of about 10.9%. Revenue from assessment and procurement solutions increased from 247 million to 356 million, reflecting 44% growth. EBITDA for H1 FY26 stood at 275.5 million compared to 261.1 million in H1 FY25, growing by 5.5%. EBITDA margin stood at 22.9% compared to 24% in the previous year. The decline in the margin is attributable to a 29% increase in other expenses, primarily due to higher legal and professional fees as well as the income tax refund write-off mentioned earlier. PAT for the H1 FY26 was 164.9 million compared to 46.5 million in H1 FY25, showing growth of 254%. Please note that there was a deferred tax impact in H1 FY25 of about 9 crore. After this adjustment of wage, the growth would be 21%. The segment performance. In Q2 FY26, educational technology services contributed the largest share of revenue at 53.6%. followed by assessment and procurement solutions at 28.5%, learning and student success solutions 12.5%, learning design and content solutions 5.4%. For H1 FY26, education technology services contributed 52.7%, while assessment solutions contributed 29.6%, learning and student success solutions 11.4%, and learning design and content 6.3%. Geography and client concentration. North America remained our largest geography, contributed 63% of our Q2 revenue and 62% of the H1 revenue. Europe and UK contributed 22.5% in Q2 and 23.5% in H1. Revenue concentration among the top 5 customers stood at 64% in Q2 and 68% in H1, reflecting our strong long-term relationship with our global clients. the balance sheet and ratios. Our balance sheet remains strong and resilient. Net worth stood at 3,877 million, while net debt stood at 252 million, resulting in a net debt to equity ratio of 0.07. Please note that the company has 2,449 million, that is about 245 crore of bank balances other than the cash and cash equivalents, which is kept as fixed deposits of the in bank. ROCE for the H1 FY26 stood at 5.6% compared to 5.4% in H1 FY25, while ROE improved to 4.3% compared to 1.6% last year. This ROCE and ROE not annualized. Liquidity remains comfortable and we continue to optimize our working capital cycles. With this, we are happy to open the floor for questions and look forward to addressing your queries.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Raman KV with Sequent Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So my first question is I just want to understand the seasonality of this business. I just want to understand how much revenue happens usually in H1 versus H2 and how much EBITDA happens in H1 versus H2. And what is the main reason for this business to be H2 heavy? I just want to understand. I think in one of the interviews, you said your Q4 is usually heavy in terms of revenue and margins. Yes. So I just want to understand that aspect as well.
Sure. Raman, right? Good afternoon. Yeah. Yes, you are right. You heard it right in the other interviews as well. Our H2 is typically higher than our H1. Historically, if you look at the 4 or 5 years also, it is in the range of 40% being the first half, 40-45% in the first half, and 55-60% in the second half from the revenue point of view. So since revenue is lopsided to the second half, and at the same time, on the expenses side, it is fairly even. You know, all the four quarters are even from the expenses point of view. Therefore, the margins are, again, you know, higher in the second quarter, significantly higher in the second quarter.
Understood, sir. And why is this, if I may ask, like, why is there a seasonality in the business?
There are two reasons I would attribute this to. One is the seasonality is because of the budget cycles. Our customers who are mostly in the market such as US and UK, they have their annual budgets happening in our Q4, which is their Q1. They decide on the budgets in our Q3, which is their Q4. Yeah, so that is one of the reasons why the budgets are opened up during our Q4 and their Q1. The other is historically there have been many large annual license arrangements that have been in Q2 and Q4, and that is the reason why you will see more on the second half.
So basically the licensing agreements usually renewal starts in January, which is like the start of the particular year, which makes your Q3 and Q4 business heavy.
The renewals will be typically 3 to 5 years. Our contracts are typically 3 to 5 years, mostly. There aren't any annual contract renewals. What I'm talking about, the budgets available during the year and the contract renewal in the second half is mostly from the numbers point of view. We start with, to be a little more detailed in this, we start the year with a projected number of tests or users or whatever the unit is. And then as we progress, right, so the second half is where we accumulate the number of tests. And for the subsequent year, we will look at a higher budget. That means there will be covering large more, the increased number of tests or number of users. So they would expand their reach. For instance, you know, if it is a test publishing organization, they would be doing at least, let's say, five different types of tests. They would include some more. Or, you know, they would expand their reach in terms of geographies or things like that. So that happens typically in budget cycles, and that is why the second half is high.
Understood.
They are not
Yeah, understood. And my second question is from the growth perspective. If I'm looking at your numbers, your learning, the learning and student success and learning and design content division hasn't been growing since the past 3 years. It hasn't shown any growth, and majority of the growth which is coming is basically coming from your edtech services. So I just want to understand what's your growth guidance overall, and if you can, is there a reason why your product segment divisions, not product segment, but the learning and student success and learning design and content segment revenues are not growing, and are you planning to take any actions on that?
Yeah. On the learning design and content solutions, what we do is certain kind of work, let's say building simulations, or it could be something which is content aligned to our other product segments, like for instance assessment content. These kind of work is what we do, which go hand in hand with assessment and learning, right? From that point of view, it is an important segment for us, although we are not focusing heavily to become a content development company, right? So our focus has been traditionally, in the last 25 years, our focus has always been technology, building platforms and licensing platforms. Developing content has only been a supporting activity for us, because that makes our offerings complete, as well as we learn, you know, when we develop content for our customers, we learn how would they use those content objects or the what would be their content strategy. That helps us in improving our learning, the platforms, technology platforms. That's the reason why we have content solutions. Not that we do not want to grow it, but then, you know, the focus has been more on technology. That is the reason it has been traditionally smaller. It's in the range of 5-6% traditionally, and we would keep it. Although, you know, the line between technology and content is blurring. You know, there is lot more AI coming in content development as well. And our technology abilities are enabling us to do more on the content side as well. So that is something that we are seeing in the recent past, where there is more traction in the content development, learning design and content development as well. And we would believe that that segment also will grow, although it is not a major focus area for growth. Coming to the learning design and student success platforms, you know, these customers whom we have been with us for a long term. These are publishers. There is one of the products within that segment, which is called OpenPage, which is a digital interactive ebook ecosystem. That is on a steady state. You know, for instance, there is a customer in the US, a publisher, who have been with us for 14 years now on that product, and it is in steady state. You know, it's a recurable revenue. It's not growing significantly, right? It is similarly on the other platforms in the sector. There is an L&D platform, which is a corporate L&D platform. That is where we are seeing some traction now, and that's what you would have seen in the recent numbers also. We are growing on the learning design and student success platform as well, but not as much as the assessment platforms. Like what Mr. Sudhanva or CMD was saying, we focus on assessments. That has been our focus area. We have been investing heavily on our product, on our platforms, on AI for assessments, as well as, investing in understanding the domain better. So that is the reason why we see higher traction on assessment and property.
Thank you. Mr. Raman, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Arnav Bhattacharjee, an individual investor. And to ask a question, please press star and one. Thank you.
Hello. Am I audible, sir?
Yes, yes, you are.
I had a business question from my side. I wanted to know that your assessment, is it are these only multiple choice questions that you are currently pertaining to? I would like to know whether, is it possible to mix learning as well as assessment, because there are some continuous delivery platforms which, give you questions, you solve in your own time, you get a personal assessment kind of thing. Then they evaluate you, maybe suggest you harder questions depending on the exercise you took. So that kind of a mix and match of assessment and learning, is that something that we have in our suit?
Yes, sir. This is Sudhanma. While we started with different types of digital assessments, multiple choice to problem solving kind of assessments, today it has matured to, I'll take a more recent example, where we have a customer who has handwritten answer scripts. It's the traditional way we took exams in my time, where we were given a printed question paper, you're given a blank answer script, you have to write answers. Even that, we are now, we have the technology to handle it, and we have been doing it. So we get the scanned answer scripts. Obviously, you can imagine the complexities. Each person's handwriting will be different. Sometimes the layout could be different. And you have a number of them which are scanned and made available to us. Today, we have the technology to extract, convert different types of handwriting into text, which is legible, markable or scorable text. And if our learning model, the AI learning models, have been exposed to previous manual scores for such responses, even auto scoring is possible. So we go from digital assessments of multiple choice, match the following, which was the early generation assessment options, to today we are able to take answer scripts, scan them, extract text from them meaningfully, and even score them automatically with a human intervention at the end, because you want to want a human being to at random check and make sure that the digital automatic scoring is correct.
That human being is setting, I just want to add one more question. That human being is someone who is from your line, or is he from the person, the educator? Who is the human being involved here?
No, sir. Typically, it will be from the customer side.
Makes more sense. That's a beautiful explanation. The second question that I had was, what about, lines? There are tools, right? Like for maths today, someone can code a language like Haskell, R. For coding platforms, you can use C++. Do we have assessments, which allow these kind of processors also running to verify instead of the model you just explained?
Yes, sir. We can code programming from scripting to various other programming languages. You make space for people to write code, and our platform is capable at the back end of evaluating the code not only for its correctness, but also for its optimistic way of writing. Could this have been written in lesser lines of number of lines of code? Have they used too many lines of code? So all these assessments are possible from a programming perspective. The other question you asked was for mathematical symbols, chemical symbols. There are plugins available do not have our own mathematical symbol editor or a chemical symbol editor, but we use plugins which are already available, like the virus editor.
That makes more sense. I mean, in NAS, I would be expecting you to, let's say, use the Wolfram plugin, right? Like, that's a widely accepted one. That makes more sense, yeah. Please go ahead.
Yes, we use Wolfram Editor. So, as a plugin, so our platform can not only do API calls, can also support plugin architecture, and then the two things we talked about, how much sophistication is possible in assessments, is it possible to evaluate programming skills? Yes. Two, what about subjects where there are symbols which are specialized? It could be integral calculus, it should be differentiation, etc. So it is possible. We have covered this entire range.
Awesome. In my first question, I also asked about that continuous delivery. By that, what I mean is mostly about learning in your platform. So let's say someone is doing a programming exercise, and let's say there are levels to it, right? So is that kind of a methodology supported today? Like, basically, I do level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4 by myself. Like, you know, it's more like those Coursera platforms. Kind of upgrading over across courses, and you are doing it in your own time. So this is not the normal assessment or the you are someone that can sit at any point of time and sort of start coding. Is there any platform, such platform that we are supporting?
Yes, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we talk about learning and assessment going hand in hand, I can think of two things. One is, let us say you are involved in a test prep or an exam prep situation. So you have been answering some questions and you have got some questions wrong. So there is a learning requirement, right? So you need to refresh or go back, learn, and come back and try questions. Basically, remediation. So in such cases, the platform enables you to move to a learning environment directly from the assessment platform. You learn and come back and take the test again. So it is basically you diagnose your abilities, there's a diagnostic test, and then go back and do remediation for those which you haven't answered correctly or you haven't performed well, and you come back and take another exit test. So that's a cyclical thing, which where learning and assessment go hand in hand. So that is what I can think of as one of the things. The other one that you mentioned was in situations where I'm involved in an assessment, in a learning platform like Coursera, where there are multiple levels that I can complete, where assessments are embedded. Yes, that is, where our learning systems and assessment platforms are integrated. You can complete a level, take a test, and then by taking a test and then go to the next level, take another test and then progress. Likewise.
Thank you.
The platform is comprehensive enough to take care of multiple variety of such workflows.
Thank you. Mr. Bhattacharya, please rejoin the queue for more questions. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes on the line of Srinivasu K with TIA. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. And congratulations for the good set of numbers.
Thank you.
Yeah, my question is about your AI Elevate. You mentioned that it's a key enabler for long-term competitiveness. So the modules like e-marking, question generation, all this, how do you monetize them, sir? Is it per script, per user kind of building or bundled into a platform pricing? So what kind of rough percentage of Q2 revenues where you have this AI component is built?
Yeah. So let me take this. See, AI Elevate is a suite of tools, suite of micro apps. And this is something where we have been continuously developing micro apps for various use cases. And what kind of use cases? Both in the area of assessment and in the area of learning. For example, like what you mentioned, item generation, right? That's one of the micro apps that we have developed. How have we developed it is based on multiple things. One, Mr. Sudharma spoke about the IT infrastructure that we have, right? It's an in-house GPU farm that we have. You know, we have procured NVIDIA GPUs and created our own farm in on our premise. And then we run multiple LLMs, a number of LLMs on our own infrastructure, and we have tuned and domain tailored each of these models. One model could be better for a certain use case where the other model could be better for some other use case. So we have used a combination of these you know, various kinds of models that are available and then created our own pipelines, AI pipelines. So item generation is one use case where a few of these pipelines would be used and an item would be generated based on a body of knowledge made available to the platform. For example, if you are talking about chartered accountants, you know, certification exams, there is a body of knowledge of chartered accountant exams available. And then there is a continuous flow of questions to the exam preparation candidate, where questions are presented one after the other automatically, or a complete question bank is generated from the body of knowledge. So this is done completely using AI, right? How, what is the business model around it? That's the question that you are asking, right? So these modules are licensed separately as well as embedded into the existing platforms. That means you use AI Elevate item generation module to generate the questions, and those questions become part of the larger question bank from where the tests are constructed. You know what I mean? So it becomes part of the workflow. Right. So both ways we have been using it. And in terms of the licensing model, there are per test models for AI you know, a base module for certain apps. For certain micro apps, there is an annual license as well, depending on the use case. Per user sometimes, yes. It will be per user as well. Depends on the use case.
Okay. Okay. So what kind of contribution do you expect from such repeatable modules over next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, sorry, I missed that question. Earlier you had asked for the contribution, right? So AI is part of all our products. See, there you can look at it as two ways. There are native AI apps. There are you know, AI enhanced platforms. Our platforms has always been there, and we have now AI enhanced them with AI. So that is the second one. AI, native AI platforms are also there. So contribution from AI cannot be quantified exactly because of that reason that AI has been embedded into our existing platforms as well. However, the traction for growth is coming from heavily from AI enabled platforms and AI apps. Why am I saying that is for the reason that there are many customers whom we have won in the recent past for AI alone. That means there is a well-established platform that they already have, but then they want us to provide the AI-enabled apps for item generation maybe, or you know, post-test forensics maybe, or whatever else. When we do that, right, we get an entry into the new customer. So that is what we have been doing now. The AI has been, apart from revenue generation activity, has also been an entry strategy for us to win new customers, many of them fairly large. Sorry, long answer to your question, but...
Okay. Thanks for answering this, sir. And my last question is, in your initial remarks, you mentioned these modules are co-developed for, you know, with AQA, AI and VTCT. So are these being built as a standardized modules inside SARAS that can be, you know, reused with other bodies also in future?
Yes. 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 These are not exclusive. These are enablers for enhancement of our products.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for answering my question.
Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Agam Shah, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Most of my questions have been answered. Just a quick question, if you can just guide through. So I was just looking at the last 4 years, the margins have been little fluctuating. So what is the stable kind of margins or kind of business runs, which is once all our investment comes through? So what is the ballpark range of margins can we do? So giving operating from 37% to 27%.
From the last year and taking out all the exceptional items in the previous years, right? We could safely say that 31%, which was the last year EBITDA, is a safe margin to keep. Although we are aiming at getting to a steady state of 35%. From the EBITDA.
Okay. And by when do we envisage that all our investments, including the fund raised and the investment we have on balance sheet, to be full-fledged utilized in terms of growth?
Sir, like with me, Mr. Sudhanma mentioned about the deployment of the IPO proceeds, there are two major areas. One is the physical infrastructure, the other is IT infrastructure. The IT infrastructure would be obviously has already begun, and we have been investing in hardware, software, networking, and all of those. That would be continuously contributing to our productivity and that delivery of our platforms to better satisfaction of our customers. While the physical infrastructure would be built over a period of 2 years. Even that's what we have mentioned in the prospectus as well. That would incrementally create, capacity for us, for our employees. We are in multiple locations now, some rented, so they would be moved into this facility. So we have looked at the physical infrastructure created to provide a return on investment, the new infrastructure that I'm talking about. To the tune of about 4 years, in about 4 years, you would see that the return on investment would happen, or a payback period of about 4 years. To that effect, for the new facility to be created, we have already acquired the land that we had promised in the prospectus. The land acquisition process is complete. And then soon we will be starting the upgradation of the physical infrastructure in our existing facility. And the new building construction will also start at an appropriate time.
And also the investment yield fund, which after the release of the pledge, would be also available, right?
Correct. So, thanks for bringing this up. We have deposits in the company to the tune of about 245 crores, which Mr. Ravi mentioned earlier, right? So we have earmarked that for growth, inorganic growth, particularly acquisitions. So this money available in the company was earmarked, like what you pointed out earlier, and now that earmark is going away. So now that going away, the money is available for acquisitions. We have been actively pursuing this process of identifying and conducting due diligence and talking to potential acquisition targets. And we would be utilizing that money for acquisition in the future. But, we are not, we want to be sure that we have the right target, which provides us particularly feet on street in the markets that matter to us, like maybe US, maybe UK, and certain other such geographies. Definitely, it should bring in complementary strengths. It should provide us with some customers in the markets that matter to us. And also, should be PAT positive is what we are looking for. And very, very important is that we want to look at the synergy between the two organizations, and we are quite wary about the potential integration risk. We want to make sure that we have done all of those correctly. We have ticked boxes, ticked against all those boxes. Only then we will go acquire companies. It should add to our top line, it should add to our margins. We should have a leverage of either improving the efficiency and adding to our bottom line, or it should give access to markets and customers. That's what we are looking at. So that money is very good.
Any, Correct. So anything in pipeline, can we expect in next 6 months or too soon to say that?
Sir, I don't know. Maybe we will probably be able to provide some indication in the next call, sir. Maybe next quarter's call.
Thank you. Mr. Shah, please rejoin the queue for more questions.
Thank you.
A reminder to all the participants, please restrict yourself to 2 questions. Next question comes from the line of Raman KB with Sequent Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, please. Yes. Yes, Mr. Raman, please.
Yes, sir. Sir, I have one question on the balance sheet part of the company. So, during the first half, there is a significant increase in trade receivables and unbilled revenue. Can you please elaborate in with respect to that? Why is there a build-up in terms of trade receivables?
Why is there a build-up on trade receivables? Yeah.
Sir, if you check that, okay, to your balances of unbilled revenue of 31st March 2025 and 31st September 2025, there is a 167 million in March 25. And September 25, it was 367. If you see the no trade receivables, okay, there's no bill revenue. It is no 344 million and September is 189 million. It is no both put together, only slightly is no 4 crore is increased. The why is it always, okay, no year end, no the billing will be, it is no cut off will be a bit extended. We will bill it and then close the books. Throughout the year, what we will used to do, we will know billing cutoff in the same month, okay, we will not extend. That's why, okay, no, there's no time and material billing will come in the next month. It will not be billed in the same month. And one more thing, if you know our annualized quarterly and 6 months license billing, over the period we will approve. Most of the things get billed in the December. That's why, okay, there's no our third quarter and fourth quarter billing will spike, okay. Actual billing will spike.
Yeah. Just to add a little more color on what Mr. Ravi said, every month through the year, from April to February, what we do is we have a cutoff on 28th of the month, right? So up to 28th of the month, we'll be doing a billing, and anything after that will be treated as unbilled. Right, that is why it is typically higher, because you know the monthly billing, there will be timesheets, compilation and all of that, which will take time, and that is why we will have it as unbilled rate. Whereas in the year end, in March, we have the provision to take it to we have a cutoff of 5th of April. Why is that? Because we do not want to carry that beyond the year. So 5th of the following month is the cutoff. So then we will have an opportunity to bill all the unbilled as well. That is why the unbilled is lower. When you look at the snapshot of March 31st, 25, it is 167 million. Whereas September 30th being middle of the year, it is 367 million.
No, sir. Basically, what I'm looking is from the cash flow statement, when we the CFO one, there has been the increase in trade receivables when we see first half of this year versus first half of previous year. It was like 43 million increase in trade receivables versus 82 million decrease in trade receivables. So I'm not comparing it with the March quarter and September quarter. I'm comparing it to the September quarter versus the previous year September quarter.
Cash flow basis, basically.
So basically, the first half of this year versus the first half of previous year, there has been stretch in working capital. I just wanted to understand the discrepancy.
Sure. Okay. See, firstly, if you look at the two periods and look at the profit before tax, as you can see there, it is roughly about 4 crores of increase, right? Profit before tax is 21.9 crores in 25, September 30, 25, and 17.4 in FY 24, September 30.
Yes.
Now, that is 4 crores. And then if you look at the adjustments to reconcile the profits and all of that, there are certain components there where there is an interest income. interest income, there is a 3 crores, which is part of the before operating profit before working capital changes.
Interest.
Three crores difference is one of the contributors. Okay, 8 crores to 5 crores, right?
Understood.
Yes. And then look at the other items below the operating profit before working capital changes. If you look at that, there are basically three different contributors. One is the finance decrease in
unearned revenue and statutory dues and salary provision.
Correct, correct. All the provisions.
Yeah.
There are provisions like the statutory provisions. There is an increase of
3 crores.
And then the GST, which is the reverse charge mechanism, GST impact, and some prepaid expenses. That's to the tune of about 5 crores.
Increase.
And like what you pointed out, there is a trade receivables impact of 4 crores.
4 crores. It is increased.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, my question was operating profit before working capital on year-on-year basis has been same, like 29.8 crores versus 29.5 crores previous year. But when we come to the net cash from operating activities, that has decreased from 24 crores previous year to 6 crores this year. And that is mainly because there has been increase in trade receivables as well as increase in other financial assets and other assets. So I just wanted to understand this discrepancy. Why was the working capital basically stretch in the working capital for the first half of this year?
See, this working capital stretch, okay, it is, if you see this, okay, the previous year there is a 8 crore cash inflow from the receivables. The current quarter is cash outflow is 4 crore. Net outflow is 4 crores. If you compare now overall receivables, including receivables, unbilled revenue increase between these two periods, okay, it does not compare to year-on-year, okay, it will be, okay, it is no 4 crore only it is increasing. The last year, okay, it is no what we are comparing, it is no cash flow is, okay, it is no 31st March 2024 versus, okay, it is no September. So that is the period is no compared and calculated the cash flows. See, if you see this, okay, it is no what is this no unbilled revenue in March 24 was, okay, 18 crore. Okay, billed revenue receivables is 29 crore. So if you, same thing, if you take it in September, there is the unbilled revenue is 24 crore and billed revenue is 14 crore. So you put together, okay, it is no 38 crore and 47 crore. The difference is 9 crore is reductions because of this. See, when you see this, okay, this as explained by, Prashant, our the business, okay, it is no, if you compare this, cash flow statement and all those things, it's no very seasonal. The sales revenue is no cyclical. Our expenses is constant, okay, it is no evenly, it is no, it will go. So we cannot able to compare, okay, it is no in between years. So our cash flow will be no perfect, our no receivables will be perfect, okay, when you compare to year-on-year. This differences will go away in 31st March number.
Thank you. Mr. Raman, please rejoin the queue for more questions. The last question comes from the line of Myra Mittal, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir,
go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, what is the roadmap for your AI Elevate?
What's the roadmap for AI Elevate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll attempt and then maybe Mr. Sudhanva will add. Elevate, like what I said, is a suite of AI apps, products. So as and when we discover potential opportunities to enhance any workflow with AI, that would become a micro app in our suite. So as it is now, we have about 16 different apps. So that could only grow. That is what my reaction is. I would pass it on to Sudhanva.
Okay.
As newer AI models are unraveled every day, we have a team which is on top of it. A new LLM which is made available to us, we will upgrade the older version of the LLM and continue to tweak it for our needs. of developing AI-based micro apps, both in our learning technologies and in assessment technologies. So, are we going to build LLMs of our own? No. Are we going to use LLMs which become available, whether it is Llama or Gemini or anything else? Yes. Do we have the infrastructure to host all these various LLMs? We do have the infrastructure in-house. And how we use those LLMs depends on what problem we are solving. For instance, a Mistral LLM could be better in solving problems which are AI, of course, but visual. Gemini could be much better at solving AI problems which are text related. We did talk about text conversion, extraction, etc. So our roadmap is have the latest LLMs available, install those LLMs on our GPUs for a given micro app or a problem we are solving. We use a particular sequence of relevant LLMs, not all the LLMs. We know which LLM is better for what. Based on that, the problem will use a chain of LLMs from what is available to us. So broadly, that is how we see ourselves moving forward. Of course, we also anticipate there could be some rapid developments on the AI front, and hence we have a team, 45 people team dedicated only to tracking what's happening in the world on the LLMs and in the AI space itself. And we also going a little bit further on this, we also anticipate there will be in a few years time quantum computing, a combination of quantum computing and LLM based AI solutions, which will play a huge role in learning technologies. So we're keeping an eye out. We experiment with qubit computing, which is available to us for free now. And broadly, that's the vision for AI from me. It can be broken down into more technical details.
Okay, sir, understood. So just one more question. So in like coming years, what geographies you are expecting will drive growth, and where are the, you know, where do you see strategic opportunities in the coming years?
Sure. Of course, US will continue to be one of our important geographies, no doubt on that. But there will be higher traction in other geographies. We are already seeing very high, you know, good traction in UK, Europe markets. That is one. And Middle East, Southeast are also looking good for us. Southeast Asia and Middle East, there are a number of new customer wins we have had in the recent past, which have potential to grow into large accounts for us. So all in all, US continues to be important. UK growing significantly, UK and Europe. Middle East and Southeast Asia promising. We do have an India strategy, which we will implement sometime soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Dhananjay Sudhanwa, Chairman and Managing Director, ExcelSoft Technologies Limited, for closing comments.
Thank you. As we close our maiden earnings call, I would like to reflect on the journey ahead. ExcelSoft stands on a strong foundation built over two decades. We've seen and heard parts of it during this call. With our expanding global presence, strengthened product capabilities, and strategic partnerships with organizations such as AQA and BTCT in the skills area, we are uniquely positioned to lead the transformation of digital assessments and digital learning. The industry is undergoing a fundamental shift towards secure, highly available, scalable, and AI-enhanced platforms. And Excelsoft is deeply aligned with these long-term trends, and we did elaborate a little bit on the AI bit. I wish I had more time to do that. Our focus will continue to be on responsible innovation. We understand today's requirements on data privacy, GDPRs, secure APIs, responsible use of AI. We understand that innovation also has to be very responsible and make sure that we do not push our product in any risky areas. We continue to strengthen our talent pool. We're deepening our client relationships, particularly as we do more in the forward-looking areas. Our customers usually take some time out to understand from us how we see some of these technology frontiers progressing. And we want to continue to lead that thinking. We remain committed to building sustainable, long-term value for all our stakeholders. Thank you once again for all of you for joining us, and we look forward to interacting with you regularly in the quarters ahead. We are all always available and happy to answer queries as and when it may come up. Thank you so much for your time today. Back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, one and all. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Excelsoft Technologies Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.